It's time to get up, get motivated, and start making moves for yourself instead of working to make someone else rich. These are genuine experiences and the stories of real entrepreneurs that made the ultimate decision to live for themselves in order to achieve unbelievable results. You're listening to The Time Is Now, making your business personal. Now here's your host, Kent Clothier.
What's up? What's up? Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's Kent Clothier here. Welcome to another great episode of the Time Is Now podcast. Glad you made it. Looking forward to introducing you to my younger brother today. Many of you guys know Chris, but many of you don't, and you never had the opportunity to meet Chris and hear a lot about his story, what he does inside of our organization. You know, he's a very, very highly respected entrepreneur, but equally, he's a great father figure. He's a great role model. He's a great dad, husband. I mean, he's a guy that's really kind of got things dialed in, certainly more so as we all have, as we get a little bit older and get a little bit more wisdom, a little more education, a little more pops to the head under our belt, and we kind of start figuring stuff out. And so I've sat here and I've watched my younger brother as he's getting a little bit older like I am, and really has evolved into this just amazing guy that I'm truly honored to call my younger brother and really, really proud of. So I'm excited to have him on here today, excited to let him kind of share some of his knowledge with you, talk a little bit about what's going on in his life, what's going on from a business standpoint and from a personal standpoint, and maybe, you know, inspire a few of you guys to, because this guy's taking on some really big stuff and doing some really big things. Some of you think you're doing some hard stuff and you're about to figure out real quick just what hard really is. So I'm excited to have you here, brother. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. How are you doing?
Good, 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 good. What's going on in big old Memphis, Tennessee?
Well, it is surprisingly nice outside. You got beautiful spring weather. Got a full team in here kind of working their butts off in the Memphis Invest offices, and I'm enjoying a little bit of downtime right now. Actually getting away from all the tug and pull of the day to day and recording this with you. So
talk to everybody. Let's talk for a minute about, give everybody a little bit of introduction to yourself, right? Kind of tell everybody a little bit about who you are, what you do, kind of your background, all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah, I've got you and I, obviously, without being said, your little brother. I've got five. I'll make sure I get all this right. I've got five.
Did you seriously have to think about how many kids you've got? Did that really just happen?
When you get beyond three, you start losing counts. I mean, you gotta go through all the names and all the faces and get it all done, you know, in the right order. So I've got five beautiful children. I know all their names, but I did recently get them passports and did have to double check and make sure that I had all their birth dates right. That was interesting.
Wow.
But it was fun. Yeah, I've got five beautiful kids from age 15 down to going to turn, I guess she just turned two. And kind of, as you know, my story mimics your story in lots of ways, growing up in a family business, starting my own company, rejoining a bit of the family business, and, you know, just basically just out there doing my thing, having fun. I spend, as you know, a ton of time doing different things with the kids. When you got five, there's always something going on. It's kind of making it happen, living life. Happy to be able to do what I want to do each day. That's the big thing.
Yeah. So talk to us a little bit. Most people don't know what Memphis Invest does, or let's just assume that some people don't know what Memphis Invest does. What does Memphis Invest do right now? Right. So the family run business over there, sitting in Memphis, Tennessee, and Dallas and Houston, and working with investors. Kind of give everybody a little bit of a high level view of that.
So one, I'm also assuming everybody kind of knows your businesses and all the backgrounds that you have. So we use many of the processes and systems that you have built through the years and shared with other investors. Those are the same systems and processes we use here in Memphis and in Dallas and in Houston to buy, renovate, eventually place with a resident, and then sell to an investor roughly 700 houses a year. And so today we're managing just under 4,200 houses, and that grows by, as I just said, about 700 this year. We'll be close to $500 million in asset value under management at the end of this year. And you know, it's funny, Ken, you're around it. We talk all the time. Did we have a plan? Sure. Yeah, we had a plan, but there's no whiteboard sitting around somewhere that says this is what Memphis Invest is going to be and how it's going to do it. We basically put ourselves in a really good position to be able to take advantage of what was happening in the market, what was happening with demand from other investors. And as is kind of routine now with our family, we just set out to be better than everyone else. Part of that from the beginning was telling everybody we're going to be better than everyone else. And then the more you tell yourself what you're going to do and how you're going to do it, the easier it is to accomplish. So know, Memphis Invest, easily the largest, certainly one of the most well-respected and certainly best-branded passive investment companies, some call it turnkey investment companies, in the country.
So let's go back to you here for a second. As you, you know, you're growing up, obviously you've got Senior and I are sitting there going battle toe-to-toe inside of a grocery business. You kind of decide to go out on your own and go out to Colorado and kind of do your own thing there. Talk about how much, you know, what drove you to take that on, right? To go and decide that you had to go move hundreds and hundreds of miles away from Memphis, Tennessee and go start a business. Let's talk about that for a minute.
Well, yeah, first and foremost, you can't talk about, I can't talk about that without acknowledging the truthfulness of how difficult it is sometimes to work with family. And at the time, I was working directly with our dad, Ken Sr. Mm-hmm. And there was only a couple of the people within the company. I was basically the head of and our top salesperson at the time, but I was unfulfilled. I guess that's the best way to put it. There was a lot of challenges of working with family and I was not getting fulfillment. It didn't matter how much money I was making. Didn't matter that I had, you know, I was married. I had one child at the time.
How old were you at this time when you did this?
I was 30. Yeah, 30 years old.
Got it.
I had my dream house, what I thought at the time was my dream house. Lots of land. Just this, you know, from anyone from the outside looking in would say that I had everything. And the reality is the one thing I didn't have was peace of mind and fulfillment. And so, you know, it was scary and it was very trying and it was very difficult. But I made the difficult decision to go and try to accomplish something that was and would be considered just mine. And it's, Ken, it's funny here because I want to say one thing too. This is the first time, it was the first time I can look back in my life and say that I made a very critical mistake where I didn't have enough faith in me. This is the only time I've ever worked for someone else where I wasn't working for you under a company that you owned or working for Ken Sr. in the company he owned. I went to work for a customer of mine and I signed a 1-year contract with them. And I knew on day one that it was a mistake. And I knew on day two that literally because I had signed that piece of paper, I was going to be a man of word. I was going to stick by my commitment, but it was going to be the toughest 1 year of my life. And it was, I certainly didn't find fulfillment going to work for someone else, but I did, you know, it did lead me to move to Colorado. It did lead me to get closer with my family because we had no family, no friends, no anybody out there. We didn't know anybody. And it did lead me to a year later starting my own grocery company kind of in the footsteps of you and the footsteps of Ken Sr. before me. But I had to kind of break away. I had to go out there and take a chance. I was, you know, I look back now and I realize I was a little scared to take that first step and go do it on my own. So I took a job with someone. And thank God I did because it really taught me that, again, that was not what I was looking for. That was not going to be fulfilling. That's not who I was made to be. I was made to be something more than that. And, you know, so it challenged me. I had to stick by my contract, which I did, but then it challenged me to get out there and do my own thing.
So what was the big, looking back on going out on your own, moving to Colorado, new city, new state, new job, new everything. What was the big lesson looking back? Now you got basically 15 years worth of distance between you and that, you know, decision. What would be the big aha, the big lesson that you would want to share with people?
Well, I think the big aha is that we are, as people, we're beholden to certain comforts and certain levels of comfort or things that we don't really need. In reality, I know you remember this. I lived in a 300 square foot hotel. It wasn't even an apartment. I lived in a 300 square foot hotel with my wife and newborn. He was 9 months old at the time, but still, you know, my son spent from 9 months to basically 20 months or so, right around that time. He spent that time in a hotel. He was raised in 300 square feet with a little kitchenette, a little bathroom, and a little bed and a couch with a TV that would turn whichever direction you wanted to face. You know, if you want to sit on the couch, you want to sit on the bed. So we had plenty, but it was very interesting how we were able to make do and we're very, very happy with something smaller. And so the lesson I learned looking back, and I'm not going to sit here and say that I practiced it. I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm any better today than I was back then, but certainly I learned the lesson of happiness is not things. Fulfillment is not stuff. And if you want to go out and truly do something on your own, outside of family, if you happen to be married or have children, there's nothing that you're chained to. There's nothing that needs to necessarily hold you back. You can find peace and comfort and fulfillment in 300 square foot hotel room. Okay. It's what's outside and what you're doing and how you're, you know, the kind of fulfillment you're getting from taking those risks that really, really matters. And that was a powerful lesson for us to learn at the time, because it did help me kind of refocus on what was most important even today.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I totally understand that and see that. I'm sure a lot of people listening in can totally, well, at least I would hope that they would get that. I mean, we've all gone, that was kind of a very similar when I lost everything. You know, the big lesson was that, man, everything I thought that mattered, just suddenly I quickly realized it didn't. The people, the things, all the shit that I was collecting, that just in the end can all be gone in an instant. I mean, none of it. We just wrap our entire self-worth, or make the mistake of wrapping our entire self-worth in all this nonsense, when the reality of it is, man, you got one shot at this. You know, you might as well step up and do what you got to do and get what you got to get. So, all right. So now we go down the line and you make the big decision. You and Michelle make the decision to go back to Memphis, Tennessee, and kind of get into the real estate investing space. And then ultimately it begins to morph itself into more of a formal structure, and Memphis Invest is born, right? So talk a little bit about that transition, and kind of, you alluded to it a minute ago, but let's just kind of bring people around and say, because I don't think people fully understand. And I know, again, you alluded to this, but people love to look at myself and you and basically anybody else there that's achieved any kind of success, and with the lack of information, they have no choice but to just kind of fill in the blanks, right? They just don't understand necessarily all the trials, the tribulations, the heartache, the sleepless nights, all the money that's lost, all the times when you don't feel like you're going to be able to pay the bills, all the times when you know, you're within inches of filing bankruptcy, or your stomach is twisted up in knots and you just can't figure it out. You know, it's real easy to see where we are now and have little appreciation for all the struggle that gets you there. So talk a little bit about, you know, this evolution that ultimately became Memphis Invest and where we are today.
Yeah, and I'm going to toss back to the point I was making a second ago about, you know, about things and how we define ourselves as successful, because I think you made a really good point. I want to touch on that. And I think we can do that through this story, that when I moved back here, And we both have shared these things before. I'm not sure how often I've shared mine. I know you, this is something that you share quite often, but I have sat in front of a bankruptcy attorney and had them go through my stuff. And luckily tell me you're not bankrupt, but you will be if you don't get your act together. I've had to sit down twice and tell Michelle that essentially we have no money, you know, that I've taken risks. I've put it all out there to start businesses, and they're just not producing. They're not performing the way that I anticipated they would. And each time, what's funny is that by getting vulnerable and sharing and getting out there and talking to other people that may have even experienced what I've experienced before, I've been able to find the right answers. I've been able to find guidance and rely on other people's wisdom and pull through. And so, you know, how does that play into Memphis Invest? Well, Memphis Invest was really, the cool thing about this particular company is that the whole design of it takes into account all the businesses that we all have built and all of the mistakes that we have made, all of the successes that we've had. I mean, and that's combining yourself and myself and Kent Senior and even Brett now at this point, that what you see is a culmination of all of the failure and the success. And Memphis Invest, some call it luck, and I get that. That's more of the universe kind of working in your favor than necessarily luck. It's making good decisions at the right time, and you create what others look at and say, well, that's just lucky. But the reality is that we have gone through a lot of trial and tribulation. We've had a lot of success with all the companies that we've built, but each of us has also gone through different forms of struggle, different forms of trial. And that's the really cool thing about Memphis Invest. You know, when it was started, it was started to provide a service to people that wanted to invest in real estate but didn't have the time. Now, sometimes they didn't want to invest the time either. They would much rather hire somebody who was, we'll call an expert. And by expert, I mean experienced, rather than try and go get the experience themselves. So, and there's nothing wrong with that. And the cool thing was, is we just stepped in and said, that is what people are asking for. We're going to solve that problem. We weren't the first to do it, but I think we probably were the first to recognize how big of an issue it was and how big of an opportunity that it was. And then we started, you know, basically doing what we've done, Kent, with every business. What you've done, what we've done, what Kent Senior done with his, is just figure out a way to do it a little better, and then provide the service a little better, and then provide a little extra service, and then begin to differentiate yourself from others. That's all we've done. And we understood all those lessons because, like you said before, like we already shared, we failed. We've sat in front of bankruptcy attorneys, and we had to sit down with other, you know, business people that we respect and value their opinions. And we've shared with them very vulnerably, this is where we're really at. And there's something powerful to that. There's something powerful to taking all those life lessons and being able to build your next company. I was asked recently on a podcast, what could I share with other people about us in particular and what has made us successful? And I said that the question itself is the problem, that, you know, people want to know what the definition of success is. And you only define anything when you put a period behind it. As long as you're using commas, there's no definition. You know, is whether you're up or down, don't end the sentence. You know, when you decide to give up, well, where you stand is where you stand. You know, whether you've been successful or not successful, or you made it or didn't make it, you failed or won, doesn't necessarily matter until you decide it's over. And so, like for us and for Memphis Invest, Kent, it's still growing. And you know that. This is one of those things that is so unique, I think, about us, and not only us as a family, but the team and the people we surrounded ourselves with, is that we just keep pushing. There's always more. And to tie it back to the example we were given a few minutes ago, there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with having stuff and toys. You know, whether you call it a watch or a nice house or a nice car, there's nothing wrong with any of those things. There's only a problem when you have to find fulfillment in them. You know, if you can find fulfillment by building and hiring and training and seeing others have success, and by doing that, it brings you money and the ability to have nice things, or you know, things that you want to have, and whether it's cars or clothes or boats or houses or what, you know, vacations, whatever it is you choose to spend your money on, there's nothing wrong with that. But when you have to have those things for the sake of having them, that's where we get into trouble. And that's one of the lessons we've learned, and kind of that's why Memphis Invest is so different.
I totally agree. I think that's great insight that you're sharing there. I would probably say it just a little differently. It's really challenging to have the wisdom, and it's really challenging to have that kind of knowledge and to have it as something you can rely on, that you use as a tool that helps you to do better, if you're never willing to take the risk, right? So if you're never willing to go out there and do hard stuff, if you're never really willing to put yourself on the line and get beat up or push all your chips in, if you're never willing to do that and you ultimately don't ever do that, then you just simply are denying yourself the wisdom and the experience and what you need in order to really make things happen, right? Because inevitably you're going to fall down. You're going to fail. Show me an entrepreneur who hasn't failed, and I'll show you a failure. It's that simple. I mean, you have to experience things. You got to fall down. You got to be willing to put things out there. You got to absolutely be willing to go for it. And when you do that, even if you end up hitting a brick wall and it not working out, the knowledge you gain is so unbelievably powerful that it turns around and becomes a massive asset to you.
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Just the simple fact that action begets action. You know what I mean? And so if you want to do something we'll just use the word massive. You know, if you want to do something really, really big, if you really want to challenge yourself and put yourself out there, you have to be willing to take risks. And if you're married to fear and you want to hold everything really close and tight to the chest and never challenge yourself and try and experience anything big, then you should accept the fact that you're not going to get anything big in return either.
That's that lottery ticket mentality. Maybe I can scratch this off, then I'll win. But if I actually have to do the hard stuff, I'm not in. And you know,
right.
That's just a ridiculous way of thinking. So what's the biggest opportunity you see out there right now in business? You know, Memphis Invest or otherwise, where do you see things starting to shape up as far as business is concerned?
And you're talking about specifically the investment real estate business, right?
Well, no, I mean, what do you see out there? I mean, you get to talk to a lot of people. You see a lot of different things come your way. What do you see?
I'm going to echo what a lot of people already say and what many of us already know. For us in particular, we don't use a lot of, we'll call it cutting edge technology inside of Memphis Invest. We use a lot of, it's probably cutting edge when you talk about crunching big data, like especially with the programs that you have. But beyond that, like I think that whoever can solve problems, basically shrink the world, and I'm going to stick with real estate for now, basically shrink the world for real estate investors, create the ability to be able to whether it's virtually or through delivery of different pieces of media, whoever can create an experience for the investor that allows them and makes them feel like I'm right there is going to be, I think that's going to be big. You're going to start seeing more and more people that choose to purchase real estate, whether it's their personal homes or their, investment homes, and they're going to make those decisions from their couch. They're going to make those decisions without ever leaving. Now that's already done today, but it's a very small piece. So anybody that makes it easier for an investor to have a high level of comfort without leaving their home, and that's going to be done. That's going to be done through the use of video technology, through the use of VR technology. That's where I think it's going to come next. I've met a couple of guys that really are on the forefront of using VR technology and then combining it with, just traditional movie making to create these experiences for home buyers. They haven't done it for investors yet, but they're doing it for home buyers where people can literally look at 10 homes inside of a showing room, but they're in the home. They're experiencing what it's like to be in that home. They can feel what it feels like. They're doing some great new things, Kent, where they're coming in and they'll visit with you at your home and they will take pictures of your furniture. And then you will come to their offices and you will browse homes that you want to go see. And those can be homes in the same city, in the same neighborhood, or anywhere in the world. And they will show you your furniture in that home. And so it's just amazing. So anyway, I see that obviously technology is huge. You hear all the, I'm sure it was Mark Cuban who said the first trillionaire will be someone who figures out solutions using AI. We'll create something inside of AI technology that will be so earth shattering, so business breaking that it'll be, create the first trillionaire. And I don't know what AI is going to play in our particular industry, but I do know that the use of technology, the use of making it easier and providing a higher level of comfort for someone in their own home, in their own environment, that's going to be the company that breaks through.
Well, I definitely think that I love what you talked about on VR, because I think that's a massive, massive upside, right? I mean, when people have the ability to basically stay in one place and visit multiple homes in a virtual surrounding and get the sensation that they're actually in the home. And then when you, like you said, they layer over the augmented reality where you put your own furniture in there, that's really, really, really cool stuff. I mean, think about somebody that's relocating like you did from Colorado to Tennessee, and you don't have to get on a plane, and you don't have to put your kids on a plane, and you don't have to go to the airport, and you don't have to take off from work. You don't have to do any of that stuff. You go home with your wife at night and you sit there and you virtually tour 5 or 10 houses in Memphis, walking in the backyard and walking around the property. I mean, where you can do it all. I mean, oh my God. I mean, you think about how amazing an opportunity that really is for the right companies. Equally, I think if you're a realtor or a real estate agent, I should say, you got a pretty scary horizon coming, right? I mean, because it's only getting no different than taxi drivers believed that they were invincible, or, hotels believe that they were. We're in a sharing economy. And, you look at Airbnb, you look at Uber, and you look at what Amazon has done and making it quite painless to open up your own store right on Amazon, and Amazon will do everything for you and ship it right to somebody, and basically creating a consumer-to-consumer connection without risking anything. That kind of that technology and that opportunity is heading quickly into the real estate space. It will not be long before somebody will figure out how to really effectively, because it's still fragmented right now, we'll really effectively buy and sell houses without having to have an agent involved, or without, I mean, again, it's as investors, we know that's possible today, but it's still a clunky process, right? It's not as streamlined as ultimately it will be. It's coming. I mean, there's no doubt somebody's going to figure out how to do that.
Yeah. And it's interesting to say that now with what we talked about earlier. There's a lot of people that are listening right now that are probably wondering what investments they need to make and what preparations they need to be making, and they need to be investing in themselves and in technology right now. If you're a real estate agent and you're not already trying to offer the next generation of service, and with a personal touch, but also with advancement and making it easier for your client, you are going to be caught and left behind. It's going to take investment in yourself, but if you're willing to do that and invest in your business.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. There's a lot of people that are going to be listening. In fact, I would say 99.9% of the people listening, they're not in a position, or they never will be in a position, where they're going to go invent that technology, right? And when you say stuff like that, that sounds scary. But what we have both learned very, very well in all of our businesses is that technology can certainly play a very effective role and creating a really big business, creating a lot of efficiency processes, and creating a lot of freedom, right? But at the end of the day, it's a people business and it's a relationship business. And there's always going to be somebody out there that appreciates that and sees real value in that personal connection and that real value in somebody paying attention to them. And I talk about this all the time, but you know, it's certainly prevalent in the real estate industry, but it's prevalent in just about every industry where it's a race to zero, right? It's just an ocean of mediocrity. There's just a bunch of, it's just a sea of dipshits that are just out there in just about every business that just are going through the motions, right? They're basically, they run a me too business. They do, they wait for somebody else to do something and then they just quickly come up behind you. Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I do that too. Or I do that. And in fact, I can do it cheaper. I can do it less expensive. I can go get, you know, they try to drive the price all the way down to zero and do everything they can to get it down, trying to effectively, they think that the consumer derives value and equates cheaper with something better. And what we have proven is that when you invest in the relationship and when you invest in providing amazing service and when you actually just, you know, when you really get it down, dude, I mean, it's do the right thing, right? When you just do the right thing, that the markets, even today, will reward you handsomely, right?
So let's, real quick, let me ask you a question. Like, and we're talking about specifically real estate agents or something that we just said a second ago, right?
Yep.
Or specifically, investors. Well, now look, so both. I liked what you said earlier that it's not about inventing the next piece of technology, because that's not, you know, for a vast majority of us, including myself, I'm not an inventor. I'm not looking to invent the next piece of technology. I'm looking to stay at the forefront of using what is being developed and being one of the early adopters, quick implementers, early understanders, somebody that can turn it to their advantage quickly. But the other thing that we're willing to do, and we've always been willing to do, is invest in it, invest in ourselves, like purchasing those particular pieces of technology or using them in our advertising or putting them out there on the streets to good use. So, I love what you said there a second ago, that it's not about inventing it. It's about using it. And the simple fact that most people will not do the simple basics, handshakes, door knocking, personalized thank you cards, personal actions to build rapport. On top of that, those that can do those basics and then turn around and implement technology. And I'm not talking about auto-responding email. That's not what we're talking about. But, you know, truly give people an experience that makes them say, wow, I really enjoyed the way that interaction went down. Whether it is use of technology or use of personal touch or a combination of both. Whomever is willing to get out there and do the little things that others aren't and invest in themselves to kind of create a little competitive edge, they'll be okay. They will survive. They will, and many will thrive and move forward. And then, of course, the great thing about what you and I know, Ken, is that when you have a little bit of success, that begets the next level of success. So you reach one and you get a little taste of it, and suddenly you turn your temperature up and you get used to it and you just keep wanting to expand and grow. So There's enough out there, as you just said a second ago, that aren't willing to do that. If you're one of the very minor percentage that are, man, the next 5, 10, 15 years are going to be absolutely bananas.
Yeah, and it's not that difficult. But as we said, I mean, people are always looking for ways to set themselves apart. Just try thanking your customers. Try following up with your customers. Try sending them a thank you card. Try doing a customer outreach program. Try, you know, prior to going to any appointment, sending a FedEx to your prospects and letting them know what to expect from you. This is who we are. This is what we stand for. This is what we stand against. Here's how we evaluate houses. I mean, things like that are, again, it's just doing the right thing. When you do stuff like that, then it has, you know, technology is a piece of the solution. It's not the solution. And it makes it.
Yeah.
And most people are always looking for an easy button. And as we've proven at Memphis Invest, certainly at Real Estate Worldwide, that slowing down enough to make the customer experience matter, they will come back and reward you dramatically for that. And guess what? They'll bring friends.
Isn't it funny that shows you how low the bar has been set, how low the barrier of entry to excellence really is?
I mean, look at United Airlines. They're beating the shit out of their own customers at this point. Wells Fargo is literally, it's how fast can we screw 2.1 million people, our own clients? Let's just see how much can we screw them over? I mean, when you think about, I mean, don't even get me started on the banks, right? I mean, all the other banks. It's just, it's so crazy that that's just the world we live in. And so certainly other small businesses kind of model the very behavior that they see happening by big businesses. No doubt.
Sure.
No doubt. I mean, and it's just nuts when you think about how insane it is when it comes to the customer experience out there. So you don't have to be great. You just, if you just do the right thing, the market is starving for great so much that it will absolutely reward really good, right? Because good doesn't even exist anymore. So when something is just really good, common sense good, it appears as great. Does that make sense? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. It's,
yeah, I don't think either one of us would just say that Memphis Invest or Real Estate Worldwide is doing anything extraordinary. What we're doing is common sense. This is the way we would want to be treated as a customer, period. And we recognize that, hey, man, if I do business with somebody, it's nice when they send me something in the mail. It's nice when they just pick up the phone and call me and tell me what's going on with my investments. It's nice when they know my name. It's nice when they know my family's name. It's nice when I see them at an event. You know, they walk up and shake my hand and talk to me and make me feel like family. These are all just, but it isn't like, oh, they just bought me a fucking Ferrari, right? I mean, that's great. This is just common sense good, but it appears great because nobody else will even do that.
Yeah, it's nuts. And I like that we're talking about it here because this is real actionable common sense. This isn't anything crazy. None of this is bang your head up against the wall and trying to figure out how am I going to make it stuff. This is, or how am I going to do that stuff? This is basic. And the funny thing is both of our industries, and they are, I mean, the reality is they're littered with people that are not willing to do this. And so it's made it easy for Memphis Invest and Real Estate Worldwide, both in different pieces of the real estate industry, to both become market leaders just by being great at basics. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's crazy. Nuts, nuts, nuts.
Hey, this is Kent, and thanks for listening to the show. Listen, if you're an experienced real estate investor and you're just looking for a way to make the business easier, you're in the right place. This is exactly what we are known for. Do yourself a favor. Go check us out at thetimeisnow.com. Right there on the page, you'll see an offer to get access to a special offer that we're running right now for monthly access to our SMART system. SMART system stands for Strategic Marketing and Real Estate Training. It is an opportunity to get our best-selling software at a huge, huge discount just for being a listener. Now, when you get in there, we'll give you access to cash buyers, nationwide access to a list of cash buyers, nationwide access to all of the deals throughout the country, vacant properties, properties that have a ton of equity in them, properties that are deeply discounted and easy to flip, as well as nationwide access to our private lender database. Again, do yourself a favor, get signed up for that low, low monthly discounted offer over at thetimeisnow.com.
So let's talk about you. Let's get back to you here for a second here. If somebody was sitting here asking you, a perfect stranger, they were saying, hey, Chris, what is something that you're really, really passionate about in life right now? What would you share?
Well, you know, how old am I? I'm 44 and I'm going to turn 45 shortly. And right about the time I turn 45, I'm going to embark on a 100 mile ultra marathon foot race. And so I'm going to start at mile 100 in the Florida Keys and I'm going to run to the end of the beach. And I'm hoping to do that in less than 24 hours. That qualifies me to be able to compete in some other big races if I choose to go that route. But that's really not necessarily the point. The point is to get from mile 100 to get to zero, you know, to finish. And I guess the reason why that's so important to me right now is that I kind of woke up and realized that from an athletic standpoint anyway, from these endeavors that are going to truly make you push your mind and your body, I don't have a lot of time left to try and accomplish too many more of them, or at least to get started anyway. I don't want to look up and see I'm 60 years old and decide I want to go do some endurance event. I put it off for a few years for long enough anyway, and it just felt like this was the right time for me personally in my life through the journey I'm on to say, hey, this is the time to go try this. This is the time to go.
And you've never done anything like this before.
Last Saturday was the first time I've run a marathon or longer.
So basically, let's just call it a month out. It was the first time you actually ran more than 25 miles.
Yes. Yep.
Oh, it's a good thing you're doing for 100. Yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
Well, look, and here's the point. So I've always been in decent shape. I was a runner when I was younger. And to be fair, I signed up for five marathons, Kent. And I paid the money to join them. And all five times I came up with a reason to not do it because they were just goals. You know, I had this goal that I wanted to run a marathon. I didn't have a reason. I just had this goal. And so I put it out there and all five times I gave it up. My training wasn't very good. I got hurt. I had to travel. You know, there's always something and it was Mickey Mouse, you know, some reason why I didn't do it. And the reason why, because it was just a goal. It was easy to give up and then create a new goal. You know what I mean? It was always, they didn't have the level of importance that they needed to have. And beyond that, in my mind, I knew I could do it. I knew I could finish a marathon. It wasn't that much of a challenge. It was just this little, you know, thing I put on a piece of paper. And so I was listening to, it was kind of this unique trip that I went on, but I was listening to somebody talk about they completed the Keys 100. And you know, Jesse, it's where I'd read the book Living with a Seal about doing things that are really, really tough. I was reading stories about a guy that was trying to, several people that were trying to break the record for the fastest traverse running across America, you know, from San Francisco to New York. And this one particular thing kept coming up and it was about this digging down and seeing, you know, what you're really made of inside, this almost breaking down of your exterior, you know, the face you put out for everyone else and really seeing what you're made of. And so, look, I made a commitment rather than a goal. And I committed that I was going to do this race. I wanted it. And the funny thing was, is that I've trained now for 8 months. I went out and I hired some coaches. I did what everyone does when they first hire a coach. I did nothing that they told me to do. I fought with them. I tried to go out and learn on the internet on my own. And I you know, kind of pushed back against them until I finally gave in and just listened. And what's happened now is, dude, I ran a marathon on Saturday. Actually, I ran 31 miles, which is an official ultra distance. So now I can say I'm an official ultra distance athlete, but I ran a marathon in like 4 hours and 4 minutes and then kept on going to finish the 31. And I look around and say, you know, I knew I could do that. I knew I could do that. I knew I can, if I train to run that race faster, I know I can run it faster. But ultimately, in the end, I committed to finish this 100 miles. And I know about the suffering that it's going to put me through, which is perfectly fine. I don't mind that at all. I know about the challenges and the preparation and the game planning. And I'm getting exactly what I wanted out of this. I'm getting the opportunity to really, really, really focus in and see what I'm made of.
Yeah. I mean, you're, as Jesse says, man, do hard stuff, right? I mean, you're about to figure out what you're made of in a really big way. So anybody that's out there trying to think about, oh, I don't know if I should send my first mail campaign. Let me just get some advice. Mail the fucking campaign. Seriously? These guys are getting ready to, run 100 miles in 24 hours. And we get trapped believing that this thing we've got going on, whether it's business or whatever, is a big ass deal. And I only tell you that lovingly because I've been through all of it, right? I know how we all, I'm very guilty of it. I know Chris as well. We get trapped in our own head having a conversation that holds us back. It's all this fear. It's all this anxiety and all this other stuff that's built up. And yet, you know, if you could pick up anything from Chris, here's a guy that's about to take on something that I have zero doubt. There's a part of him that's scared. I mean, it's not going to be easy to run 100 miles in 24 hours, but it doesn't prevent you from doing it. The only way you're going to figure out exactly what you're made of is if you go for it, right, dude?
Well, let me tell you the funny thing. I was in some serious pain this past Saturday, and I was running at a pace much faster than I'm going to run the 100 miles, but I was only doing 31. So, yeah, that's how you do it. I wanted to push myself to the point of really being in pain, so I went much faster. And I tell you what, man, yeah, I was hurting. Bad. I was starting to the point of where, you know, just about every step, there was some pain somewhere. But what was so funny, I kept reminding myself, and I did get this from Jesse Itzler's book, is that if you know it's going to end, then you can endure anything. You can endure anything if you know it will end. And I kept pushing and pushing and pushing. Of course, I got done running. I got time to hang out with my kids. I went to a baseball game with them that night, you know, and I'm moving gingerly. But I literally woke up the next morning, a little bit of pain. I did a little bit of stretching out a little bit. And less than 20 hours after getting done with that race, I was fine. I didn't feel anything. I was perfectly fine. And so it gave me, if nothing else, it gave me just a ton of confidence that, and it should anyone listening, that this is the same in business, in investing, in relationships, in every part of your life. If you know that the pain ends and you're willing to go through it to be better on the other side, shit, you can do anything. You can do anything.
I love it, brother. I love it. All right, we're going to start wrapping this up. And I ask one question of everybody, because it's always fascinating to people when they hear, you know, they get an entrepreneur or somebody on here in one of our interviews, and they love to hear the answers here. So here it is, right? What's the one thing that you spend a silly amount of money on? That's the one thing. Like, man, dude, I just can't help it. I can't help myself. This is the one thing I love.
Wow, man. Well, there's...
here we go.
I do spend a silly amount of money on travel. And what I mean by that is I read every article on how to save money on travel, and yet I don't follow any of it.
Starting by booking a flight, you know, sooner than 4 hours before it leaves. That would be the top of the list.
So that's a quirk about me. I don't know why I stick to it. I don't know why I like it, but I generally only book travel a few hours to maybe a few days before I take it. I like staying in nice places. I like renting nice cars. I like taking nice flights. I like eating in nice restaurants. I mean, that is just something that I truly, truly enjoy. And you know what I like the most about it, though, Kent, is that people will treat you how you treat them. And so I love saying hi to people. I love giving smiles and shaking hands and asking people how they're doing, that kind of stuff. When you let's just say if I were to happen to buy a first class ticket, which I fly so much, I get upgraded, but just the same, if not, I'll buy a first class ticket. No problem. Especially on long flights. And when you walk in and you say hi to somebody and ask them how they're doing, when it's their job to treat you nice, suddenly their job completely changes. You know, when you walk into a nice hotel and somebody says, "Let me carry your bags," you're like, "I got it." You know, it's no big deal. I appreciate it. When you give a tip to the doorman because he got you a cab, knowing that 98% of the people that he gets a cab for will never even acknowledge him, those things are huge. And so I love travel. I love spending money to stay in nice places. I love, you know, interacting with people and just watching the looks on their faces when you know you can make a difference in their day just by kind of how you treat them. That's one of the cool things for me. So I probably spend an outsized amount of money on the way I travel, but I like it.
I'm there with you. If I was going to, which I have answered the question on the podcast in the past, but if I was going to answer it again here for the sake of this, there's no doubt. My thing is travel, period. I love seeing the world. I love seeing the world in a certain way, right? You know, somebody was asking me the other day, "Hey, you want to go camping?" I was like, "Are you out of your damn mind? I'm not going camping. Are you crazy?" Like, I'm looking at you know who you're talking to right now? I mean, I enjoy nice hotels. I enjoy, not like you said, nice flights, nice meals, nice company, hanging around people. And I think it's probably a big reason also why in our own businesses, we recognize the value of service. You know, right. When you look at the difference between a Ritz-Carlton or Four Seasons or a St. Regis or Pelican Hill or a Montage or a Peninsula. I mean, these are all really, really, really nice hotels, top of the line hotels, right? And when you really look back and you always talk about those, or at least when I do it, I'm describing, you know, the experience. It's rarely am I talking about the room or the facilities. I'm just talking about the way people treat you. I love that when I walk into those hotels, they know my name. They know me by name. Somebody has taken the time to because they certainly don't know me, right? I mean, it's not like I'm there. I mean, but it's part of their process that they have some line of communication with the staff that they know when somebody checks in. They call you by your name. They greet you. When the bellman is taking your bags up, it's "Mr. Clothier, is there anything?" I mean, that really, really matters, because the difference between, and you think about that for a second, right? You and I've talked about this in the past, but because the difference between that, you know, let's just say a Ritz-Carlton room that's $600 or $700, maybe $800 a night, and a normal hotel room that's $150 a night. There's just not that big a difference between the facilities, the hotel rooms themselves, right? I mean, it's a bed, it's a bath. Yeah, the finishes might be a little bit better, but at the end of the day, is it $500 a night different, right? So $1,500 over 3 days. Hell no. But man, everything else sure does matter. Right? Yeah. I mean, that whole experience is you're buying an experience, baby. And I agree with you. I spend a shit ton of money on it just because I love that feeling.
I would agree, brother.
All right, man. Well, this has been awesome. I really appreciate you doing this. If people want to get in touch with you, how do they find you? How do they reach out to you? How do they connect with you?
Yeah, there's a couple of ways. The easiest and one that would be probably the most impactful is chris@memphisinvest.com. And then, of course, on our family's website there, memphisinvest.com. anybody that wants to kind of reach out to me and keep up with the stuff I'm doing on the running side or anything along those lines, they can find me at chris@christopherclothier.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate you tuning in for all the show notes. And we mentioned a few books and links and all that kind of stuff. If you want to get a copy of all of that, just go to kentclothier.com. And under podcast, you'll see this episode loaded right there. You can download it, take a listen, and again, get all the links and everything you need and actually connect with Chris right there. Equally, I would really appreciate it if everybody goes on to iTunes under the Time Is Now podcast and go and give us a review, give us a rating, let us know what you want to hear, leave your comments there, let us know who you'd like us to interview in the future, talk about the subjects, what more can we do to help you out there? Because again, as we all know, baby, the time is now. There's no better opportunity, no better time where it's to do what you want to do than right now. So this is all about how do we empower you and inspire you and show you clearly how you can go make cool things happen out there in your life. So let us know what you want to hear and we will do our best to make that happen for you. And until we talk again, peace. We'll see you.
You've reached the end of this episode, but there's plenty more for you over at thetimeisnow.com where you can sign up for our free mailing list to help you make the next big shift in your career. As always, we'll see you next time on the Time Is Now podcast, where your business is personal.